The thrill and excitement of March Mania is here, and DraftKings Sportsbook, one of America's top-rated sportsbook apps, is giving new customers a shot to turn $5 into $150 instantly in bonus bets with any college basketball bet. You can find all the lines and available odds, of course, at the DraftKings Sportsbook app. North Carolina listeners, don't forget, DraftKings Sportsbook is now live in your state. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app and use code SBNFL. New customers can bet $5 to get $150 instantly in bonus bets only at DraftKings Sportsbook with code SBNFL. The crown is yours. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or in West Virginia, visit www.1800gambler.net. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly on behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort. 21 plus, age varies by jurisdiction, void in Ontario. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. See dkng.com/bball for eligibility, deposit restrictions, terms, and responsible gaming resources.
Welcome to the Repack. I'm Justice Mosqueda for Acme Packing Company. I'm here with Evan Tex Western. Say what's up to people, Tex.
What's up, people? Packers win. It's a good day.
14-12. I ran to the CVS. After the game, got yelled at by two different groups of Packers fans coming out of bars because I was wearing a Packers shirt. Both of them said a variation of, like, we didn't deserve that, but, like, in a really excited, drunk fashion. They were definitely running to the CVS to get, like, Pedialyte or something. Those boys.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I needed a little of that. I needed a little of that today, though. Yeah, I needed a little of that today after going to the abysmal Wisconsin Ohio State game yesterday. So, but yeah, this much better. At least it wasn't a completely wasteful football weekend.
Yeah. College football was good yesterday.
That was fun. If you say so.
I don't want to dabble too much into it. I saw the Wisconsin score at the half and I was like, oh, that's tough for Tex. I had to go to a bar yesterday to watch USC Oregon State, two undefeated Pac-12 teams.
Really?
You can't, no one can get Pac-12 network. I had to go to a bar.
Oh my gosh.
I have YouTube TV. It goes through my PS5. I literally cannot have access to the Pac-12 network.
Oh my God.
Fire Larry Scott again. Hire him so you can fire him again. Green Bay Packers won 14-12. Game almost went into overtime. Packers were up 14-3 at the half. I had basically done a celebration of winning this game already.
You almost cursed us, man, in the APC Slack when it went 14-3. You're like, that's it, we're winning this game, this is great. And then that third drive came and they're driving down the field and Aaron Jones fumbles and everything goes to shit.
Well, that's the worst part. It wasn't after 14-3.
Oh, that's
right.
It was
during that drive.
It was during the middle of that drive.
Yeah, they get in the red zone and I'm like, they're gonna score again. They're up at least two full touchdowns, if not three scores. Like, we're gonna win this ball game. And then Aaron Jones coughs up the ball at the 1 yard line. Everyone starts pointing fingers. Not going to say anyone, Tyler Brook, but second half of the game, you know, Tampa Bay scores 9 unanswered points in the second half. Packers don't score a single point. Comes down to a 2-point conversion. Devondre Campbell tips the ball. After the game, Aaron Rodgers says that he caught something on the scoreboard, the home scoreboard in Tampa, showing something in between when Tampa Bay got a delay of game and when they actually, like, started to get up to snap the ball from the 7 yard line. From the 7 yard line. I have no idea what the heck he could be talking about. LaFleur even, like, smiled and was like, yeah, I'm not going to talk about that. But yeah, we definitely had a conversation in between plays. I don't know what you could see on the scoreboard that would show you something that would tip Tampa's hand, unless they, like, did a zoomed up shot of, like, Tom Brady pointing to, like, one of the play calls his wristband.
Yeah. Yep.
Like, but I don't think that they would have done that. Even
camera operators, like, no, that's bizarre, but I can't think of anything else that it could have possibly been that would have been something, like, meaningful enough that he would run down there and try to point it out to LaFleur. It's bizarre.
Yeah.
So I got to feel like we'll be talking about this one for a little while. And, you know, hopefully eventually, maybe at the end of the season or something, we'll find out what happened there.
Does this feel like a good win to you? This doesn't feel like this is a grimy game. I understand the Packers won. It's amazing for them moving forward, right? They're tied at the top of the NFC North. Three teams at the NFC North are sitting at 2-1 right now. The only team that isn't is the Detroit Lions. obviously having the tiebreaker over Tampa, that's going to be great moving forward, because I think Tampa is, when they're healthy, probably the most talented team in the NFC. Maybe you make a case for the Eagles. I don't really think of anything out west at this point, but yeah, and having that tiebreaker probably will come in handy at some point.
Yeah, definitely. But like you said, it didn't feel like an exciting, thrilling win, right? It's one of those where you're hanging on for dear life. And I was, in a way, it reminds me a little bit of both games against the 49ers last year. You know, the situationally, it's, you know, week three on the road after getting blown out in week one and beating an overmatched division opponent at home in primetime in week two. You go on the road to a place that has not been kind to you, and you get a really tough, close, hard-fought win against an NFC team that has had your number a little bit. But the way it happened felt a lot more like the playoff game against San Francisco last year, with, you know, the offense clicking early, then an ill-timed fumble, and the offense just can't do anything the whole rest of the game. And the difference this time was that the Packers special teams didn't piss it away. Packers special teams were actually pretty damn good for the most part today, when, you know, Amari Rodgers wasn't just having a cat scrambling on the keyboard in his brain. But otherwise, it just was one of those ugly wins that it was. I mean, it's got to be a nice boost for this defense to play the way they did in pretty much that entire second half until the last drive of the game. But it doesn't feel as satisfying as I feel like a win over Tampa Bay in Tampa Bay should feel.
Yeah. If you would have told me after week one they'd be sitting at 2-1, you know, I'd be, you know, sign me up for it automatically. Ecstatic. Right?
Yep.
Yeah. But a couple tough situations, you know, occurred in this game. I thought running game never really got going. I mean, they tried to run. Got to give them credit for that. They try to run. And even so, they had 25 passes, 35 pass attempts. A lot of those pass attempts were also off of RPOs, right? So they were basically, you know, calling run plays in that situation, giving Aaron Rodgers an out there. I thought Tampa had a really good game plan to handle the RPOs. I know there were a couple of them, like the, obviously there was the touchdown. And then there was kind of that big gain for Randall Cobb, right?
Yep.
But a lot of times, I mean, the Packers aren't doing a lot of the things that they used to do, because they've moved into kind of a gun run team instead of an under center run team. Yep. So like when they were an under center run team last year, you have to be able to, on some of these zone plays, you have to account for the end man on the line of scrimmage, not on the front side, but on the backside, right? Cause that guy, if you don't block him, he's just going to chase down the play. And there are more gaps than you have linemen, right? If you have five guys on the line of scrimmage, there's six gaps. If you add a tight end, there's seven gaps. So like, you're never gonna like have that stuff add up. So what the Packers used to do last year was, you know, they would either lock it on the backside and have like the left tackle basically like, or doesn't necessarily have to be the left tackle, but the backside tackle would just basically like pass set against the end man on the line of scrimmage. They're reading the outside linebacker to decide the RPOs and stuff, or they would have, you know, an off tight end like Josiah DeWara come and slice across the formation, kick a guy out. Now they're doing all these RPOs where they're reading like true pre-snap numbers. So they're just counting numbers on the outside on the wide receivers. They don't have anyone to handle that guy on the backside. So like technically, on these RPOs, it's almost like a triple option. Rodgers has the option to hand it off. He has the option to pull it, or he has the option to throw it, right? Rodgers is just not pulling it. And they're basically giving the reads of, hey, pull it, pull it, pull it, pull it, pull it over and over again. And that's why you're seeing some of these runs get chased down from the back. And you're like, wait, should he have thrown it? And it's like, no, they have the numbers covering the throw. He needs to pull it in that situation. But he's a 38-year-old quarterback. So, like, of course you're not going to, like, pull it 10 times a game. So it's going to be interesting to see how they kind of evolve. And Tampa got him a couple times too. Tampa was matching up in man a couple times, and Green Bay was getting into nub sets, which is when you divorce the wide receivers and the tight ends left to right. So you have three wide receivers on one side, just the tight end on the other side. You have the option of, okay, my cornerback is setting the edge on the tight end side, or he's going to play slot receiver or slot corner over, you know, the trips side of the formation, right? And Green Bay was getting them into situations like that where it was like, you can pull Royce Newman and he has a one-on-one block with a safety. And that's the only thing stopping Aaron Jones from busting a touchdown on some of these pin and pull plays. And they just weren't able to get it done. Carl Nassib did a pretty good job of setting the edge. He made a difference in the ground game today. I wasn't expecting that necessarily, because I know he was on the street earlier this year, right? Like he was in the street this offseason. So they had a good game plan, I think, for the ground game. Obviously, that turned into Aaron Rodgers throwing a ton of RPOs. It wasn't sexy football. Feels gross, but like a win is a win is a win. And we got, what, three easy games before Buffalo now?
Three or four, yeah. I think, definitely a couple winnable games here. And, you know, who knows? Buffalo lost today in Miami. So
Josh Allen set the record for pass attempts or dropbacks in a game.
Oh, my gosh.
Crazy. How did Miami win that game?
I don't know. They showed the stats on the Sunday night pregame show, and like Buffalo had like 40 minutes of time of possession. They had like some hideous amount of advantage in terms of like offensive stats, yards and first downs and stuff. But just a crazy, crazy mess of a game.
The Dolphins are the like horseshoe in the butt.
Yeah.
This year. It's like, how the heck does this keep happening?
Yeah. It's nuts. But yeah, like you said, it's take this win. I'll be more than happy to grab it any way we can against Tampa. Just like last year, was ecstatic to win any possible way against San Francisco out there in week three. So take it, move on from it. Hopefully, learn a little bit from it. Hopefully they'll figure out a way to either Rodgers starts keeping some of those option plays a little bit to actually make defense to start respecting it, or else we're going to see a lot of the same thing, I think, from defenses, just not respecting his, his part of that option. And that's going to, I think, cause a lot of problems. And LaFleur is going to have to figure out a way to scheme around that.
It's weird because obviously the guy that they want to run block, right, is Mercedes Lewis, who's does it with his hand in the dirt. But if you watch, like, all this stuff is trickling up from college football, right? If you watch these high end college football teams like Alabama and Ohio State and stuff like that, you got to see them live this weekend. Like, they're not using inline tight ends when they're doing this RPO stuff. They use an off ball guy because that guy then can either block play side if you want the quarterback to read, right? Or he can slice across the formation and block the end man on the line of scrimmage if you want to read the linebacker instead of the down lineman, right? So sometimes you have to change those keys and stuff if a team is going to play you like Tampa. So I mean, taking Lewis off the field doesn't sound sexy, but like maybe move him off the ball. Like, you got to figure out something because it can't just keep being this over and over. They have a beat on you now. They have a beat on you.
Exactly.
Romeo Doubs has more yards than Davante Adams over the last 2 weeks. Let's talk about it.
Yeah, let's. Big, nice breakout for Doubs. 8 catches today. I think I saw that was one off the Packers rookie record.
Yeah.
I don't remember who had that, but yeah, just a really good performance from him. That first one on that first drive, nice 20 yarder, and then obviously finishing it off with a touchdown was pretty exciting. And it's nice to see him backing up all the hype that, you know, that we put on him even since draft day, right? That we were all excited about him in the fourth round. They've definitely got something with this guy. He's fun to watch.
8 catches, first time for a Packers wide receiver since 2018 for a guy not named Davante Adams.
No way.
Yeah. They told that to Rodgers and he was like, wow. I mean,
that's crazy. And he caught all 8 of his targets too. Didn't have a single incompletion thrown his way either, which is pretty impressive.
So Sammy Watkins is out. He's on IR. I think it's worth noting he was at the game.
Yeah, he was on the sidelines.
Yeah, he was on the sidelines. And I don't know how many, you know, there's I'm certain young Packers fans listening to this who probably don't remember how the Super Bowl went back in 2010. But like Nick Barnett and JerMichael Finley didn't stick around in season. And that became a big deal when Super Bowl photos came around. That's the reason why I remember, is because we had that dumb controversy then. I mean, if he's hanging around the facility, like, is there a chance he comes back this year? Like,
I'm assuming
hamstring.
Yeah, that's my thought, is that they're thinking that this is a, you know, a maybe a 4 to 6 week thing, and maybe they can get him back mid season. That's the only thing that would make sense to me.
Yeah. Cause I don't think they were pressed to elevate Patrick Taylor to the active roster either. And that was the right. corresponding roster move that they made when they put Sammy Watkins on IR. They just didn't list him as designated to return. So, and obviously they can change that moving forward. It's just something worth keeping an eye on. Cause I know, oh my goodness, the commenters on the Sammy Watkins IR post. It was they got two more games out of him than I thought they would and stuff like that. It's like, guys, he had like 100 yards last week. Like,
yeah,
is he not doing enough?
He's got the biggest offensive play of the year so far still through 3 weeks. He's still got something to give. So let's not close the book on him just yet.
Christian Watson is out with a hamstring injury. That was felt like it was a pretty big deal because he was not only their deep speed, but also outside of Aaron Jones, kind of their lateral speed, right?
Yep.
You even saw like in game again, they were running RPOs to like AJ Dillon where he would, you know, run a bubble out of the backfield and stuff like that. And just never really could get it going out on the perimeter on some of those screens. I think that's why they started doing downfield RPOs instead of just running screens and stuff.
Yeah.
It'll be interesting to see because, I mean, they need bodies. They need bodies at receiver. I mean, they signed Travis Fulgham back to the practice squad because they didn't have enough guys to run practice with.
Yeah, and I think Watson would have been a great candidate to stretch, you know, some of those jet sweeps, the little pop passes that they've been using him on the first 2 weeks. I think that would have been extremely useful in this one, although they didn't really do that with Romeo Doubs at all in this game, and they have they've given him one or two of those in the first couple of weeks too. So I don't know, maybe that just wasn't in the game plan, but I think that would have been an area where you could have at least tried to stretch them laterally a little bit.
Yeah. Jaya Alexander left. They didn't really give an update about him other than they said it was a groin injury. Obviously, Russell Douglas came off of or moved outside from nickel to outside corner, which is what he played last year, right? And he did really well out there last year. Keyshawn Nixon stepped up to play the slot. He was brought in, you know, as a Passaccia guy. He had experience with him with the Raiders on special teams and did really well in the preseason. Yeah. I thought, you know, it was really a battle between him, Shamar John Charles, and Rico Gafford. And what's his name? Tavarius, whatever. I forget what the other corner's name. He was making
the end. Keandre Thomas was in there.
Keandre Thomas. Yeah. That's what it was. They were all pushing for basically two roster spots. So it was really competitive out there. He got the nod, played well. I thought he played really well. And even as a gunner and a vice guy, you know, he downed a ball at the 1 yard line, like on punt, like just a good football player, a solid guy that you want on your team.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, punched out the fumble, the first fumble that the Packers forced in that game. Mm-hmm. So, or second one rather. Cause Quay, I think, had the first one, but great. Seems like a great depth guy that you can count on in a pinch. I think we all kind of thought that Jean Charles was going to be the backup slot guy for this season, at least especially coming into the season, because that's basically where they used him almost exclusively last year. So they clearly really like what Nixon gives them in the slot, and I thought this was a really, really good performance for him. He's again stepping up in a game that they really needed him.
I thought it was kind of interesting. Like, there was at one point in the game, I think there were a couple penalties, and there was like a 3rd and 30. They didn't even play dime. Like, they just stuck in nickel out there. Like, they played penny. And it was like, okay, you're just not going to be using dime this year. I think they played one snap of dime all season in three games. It was in the first game. And that's when Keyshawn Nixon came in and ended up getting hurt, actually, the first time around. So it'll be interesting to see kind of how this defense shapes up. They're doing a bunch of funky things on the front end too, the pressure packages now. Josh Myers, the center, left. He was replaced by Jake Hansen. I don't think we have an update on that one either.
I have not seen anything yet. Yeah, as of this point.
Hopefully, you know, I mean, do we want Hansen starting at center? That's probably his best position, honestly, because he doesn't have to block guys by himself. He's always going to be the help guy as a center for the most part, unless he's down blocking and then he just doesn't have to get beat across his face. But you know, Zach Tom played there in the past. You know, it'd be interesting to see if he can get some work there. It seemed like Myers too was just cramps, so I don't think it would be a big deal.
Yeah, that's kind of what I was thinking as well. We'll see what comes out. Probably tomorrow we should get an update from LaFleur, at least a little bit, some sort of indication on if it's anything serious. But yeah, hopefully he'll be able to be back out there, because I know he kind of got dogged a little bit for some of his play in the last couple of weeks, but certainly is a much more solid player. There's a pretty big gap, I think, between him and Jake Hansen. I think that's a pretty safe understatement.
Yeah. Let's talk about the offensive line. I got this from my buddy Keegan Abdu, who I'm going to have on Intercepted for Giants week when they play in London and stuff like that. He's a big old Giants fan, works for Next Gen Stats. He said 3.6 yards per play in pony package is what the Packers had today. Pony package is, you know, when they have AJ Dillon and Aaron Jones on the field. They've had 28 plays of that this season for 109 yards. That's a 3.9 yards per play average. This was my worry. This was my worry the whole time. So they talked about in the offseason. They said, you know, AJ Dillon and Aaron Jones are great running backs. We want to get them on the field together. That's totally fine, right? Here's the problem. It's really hard to get two running backs on the field together. There were only like three teams that did it last year.
Hey, man, Seattle got four running backs on the field last week together
to throw
at the same time. Yeah.
To throw an interception. I mean, the Packers, really what they do is they'll line up. There's two things that they do. They line up Aaron Jones outside, right? And they jet motion him when they're under center. And then you have to either figure out Aaron Jones is getting the jet motion or AJ Dillon's getting the carry up the middle. Or they're in the gun and they either get into or out of split back gun with both of them in the backfield and they run some sort of RPO. That's it. That's all they do.
There's no wrinkles. I think we even talked about it during one of the spaces, maybe it was last week, but yeah, there's no wrinkles. There's no creativity, at least yet. And maybe they're building up to it, but you would have thought that this would have been the game to break it out against this team, against the Tampa defense. And in a game where you're missing a couple of your receivers as well.
Yeah. There was also, beyond just kind of the run game in the backfield, they had an A dot, so average depth of target of about 2 yards today before the Alan Lazard bomb down the sideline. I mean, the Packers really weren't drop back passing very much. They had that one interception, right, where Rodgers wanted the DPI call and just threw the ball at the DPI, which is maybe don't do that. Maybe don't. And then they had like the free plays and stuff like that. But outside of that, I mean, it was a lot of like dink and dunk stuff. And a lot of chip help. Aaron Jones was out there in the wing and empty a whole lot, like helping out these offensive tackles. You saw the tight ends do it a lot. A little bit less with Tonyan. Tonyan was second in targets this week. You know, we talked about when David Bakhtiari isn't playing left tackle, Tonyan's used for chip help a lot with Josh Nyman. We'll see what that's like moving forward. Because if we can get, you know, 2020 Tonyan back, that would be great in terms of, you know, the passing game.
Yeah, Rodgers clearly trusts him a lot more than a lot of these young receivers at this point. And I know Dobbs had 8 targets today, but there were a couple of plays too where, you know, he didn't seem like he was going through his progressions, and he just locked in on Bobbs. But I think there was a couple of those third downs in the second half that, yeah, that ended up going for shorter yardage, or he seemed to be locked in on Tony a little bit. So I don't know if, again, the chemistry part plays into it a little bit, but I mean, Bob still looks good. You know, we talked about it after that first game, and he had that real nice catch and run, and he looks quick. He looks fast. So I think Rodgers just needs to be, you know, be smart and continue working through his progressions. You've got takes on that too. And I'm interested to see what you have specifically on that piece of it with Rodgers.
He's just not running his progressions at all. Like it's very, I mean, we've seen this entire season, right? And we saw it in the San Francisco game. We saw it in Detroit at the end of the year. I don't know what's up with him, but he seems like he's doing the thing where he's like, oh, I wanted to get that guy touches. I wanted to get that guy going. And it's like,
yeah,
we're not good enough to be able to do that. Like, you just have to run the offense right now. And it's weird seeing him break in and out of that, because there are times where, like, he's fully in control of the situation. We saw it a couple times against Tampa where he's going hurry up, on third downs so that they can't sub in guys, right? He's mm-hmm. going hurry up, trying to catch them, you know, changing personnel when they're not changing personnel. He's up there when I'm thinking of the Tonyan play where he got the first down, where he was like diving at the first down yard line, where yeah. Rodgers is like bluffing the snap count. And they're showing like a full out blitz, but he's seeing the left outside linebacker like take a couple steps back, changes the entire protection. Tampa sends like the craziest blitz I've ever seen. They pick it up perfectly fine, and he could just deliver a ball to Tonyan. And it's like, how come you can do that sometimes? And then sometimes it's just like you're just not looking at the guy who like the play is designed. Like he's there, it's yeah. old West Coast offense staples. It's not like we know what these plays look like on paper. We know how these plays are supposed to be read. Like,
mm-hmm.
why aren't your eyes there? Just doesn't make sense to me.
No idea.
I would say his protection was pretty good today. That yeah. was the best I've seen of this offensive line so far. You know, not surprising that, you know, Bach and Jenkins being out there, being able to kick Newman in, you know, Hansen only being on the field for a limited amount of snaps, like all that stuff definitely helped.
And against a really good front too. I think great that's another telling piece that having these guys back, and Jenkins does seems like he's getting there. He definitely doesn't look like he's 100%, but no. He's at least starting to come along at least a little bit from last week. I think there was at least some incremental improvement to my eyes from, you know, from the Bears game to today.
To me, Bach looks healthier than Elton does.
Mm hmm. He looks more comfortable, at least just yeah. and consistent. Yeah. Agreed.
Yeah.
So, and again, what's the rotation thing? What are we doing?
I don't know. So yeah. Have we talked about that yet? So Bakhtiari came in. He apparently did not like the idea of them rotating left tackles, but LaFleur was like, you know, with the heat, all that stuff. And it was, I think they said that the on-field heat was like 100 degrees or something like that, and
yeah,
the Tampa locker room doesn't have AC, like, or visiting locker room doesn't have AC or anything like that. So the Packers were playing in absolute hell from like a temperature standpoint. LaFleur was saying that basically he didn't want to put Bakhtiari out there when he's like not necessarily in NFL condition yet, like he's not in season condition, he's not been doing all yeah. the preseason stuff that everyone else has. So they rotated him and Nyman every other series, and I guess it kind of worked out. It's got to be funky though. I mean, it's got to mm-hmm. be weird.
Yeah, there's no continuity there. Then
I've also never seen anyone else do that.
No,
ever.
It's completely bizarre. But yeah, no. When he was out there, he looked like normal Bach, and that was the case last year in week 18 too. There's no question about his level of play. We just got to hope and, you know, cross our fingers that whatever, you know, fluid buildup and stuff isn't coming back and being an issue after today. And then, you know, that he feels good mentally and everything. And, you know, maybe next week and back home against the Patriots, we can get him back on there for a full game.
I'm hoping so, because we should find out this week, right? Like if
yeah,
he does like something weird pops up. And he's not practicing all week.
Like, I was going to say, like, LaFleur already said that he's not going to practice 3 days in a row at any point. Yeah. So don't freak out if he's, you know, getting a veteran day on Thursday or something. But yeah, if there's multiple days this week that he's off the field, then I'm going to be a little concerned.
So we do NFL Reacts, right, on the website at APC. It's basically, if you haven't participated in it yet, it's, you know, there's national questions, right? So it's like, who are you picking in these games? And then there's like the team level questions, which are like, how confident are you in the direction the team is moving? One of the questions we put in there was, when will David Bakhtiari return? These were the results. There were four options. This week, by midseason, end of year, or never. Never won that. 43% this week. By midseason was 42%.
Yeah.
This week was only 8%. So 8% of you were right. And then 7%, the last of all of them, were end of the year. So yeah, we were full blown doomers about David Bakhtiari. He returned. Does it count if he returned this week? He didn't play a full game. I think.
No, counts. But he played. I think it counts. I think that's legit. So yeah. And, you know, some of those results came in Wednesday before practice. So
yeah.
I get some of that. And but I mean, if you had asked me Wednesday, I probably wouldn't have said this week either.
Yeah.
So it's such a weird scenario and everything with ever since the since this time last year when we were, you know, talking about hopefully getting him back at some point during the season last year, the whole process has been bizarre. And so why shouldn't it stay weird at this point?
Yeah. That's why I was just like, show me the baby, right? So they always say, show me the baby. I don't want to hear about it. Show me the baby. Cause it's like, I've just heard too much. I mean, summer last year, we thought maybe Bakhtiari mm-hmm. week one, that there was a chance, maybe not yep. a good chance, but a chance. And it's didn't even come close. Didn't yep. couldn't be further away from that. Last point on the offense, 2.7 yards per carry. Not good. I think the film is going to be bad for some of these guys. Obviously, when you're moving around those offensive linemen so much, it's going to be tricky on some of those pin and pull plays, even though it is kind of like a easy run scheme to learn. Like, there are just times where it's like, yeah, Carl Nassib is not only taking out the tight end blocking on the play side, but also Royce Newman. So the safety comes in totally free, unscratched, and it's a TFL. But there were times where you saw some of those windshield wiper down blocks, right? Like we talked about coming into this week where they were able to spring these plays against blitzes. So I don't know. I haven't lost total faith in the ground game, but this certainly wasn't a good game for them.
Right.
Defensively, the only time I felt like the defense, because when they were getting driven on, they were getting turnovers. The only time I felt like the defense was playing really poorly was that last drive. And
yep.
I don't even think I could blame them, because it's, you're playing the clock, you're playing Tom Brady, you blitz him and he's just going to gut you. He's done this a million times before. You just like try to play the clock at that point and like, okay, I dare you to throw it to Cole Beasley and Breshad Perriman, who fumbled, and all these other guys, then move the ball down the field. And that's what they did. They made him do it with 1,000 cuts.
Yeah. And it was frustrating to see just how soft the zone was. I certainly understand, you know, rush four, try to get pressure with your front four, who'd done a pretty good job to that point, right, against a bad injured offensive line. But just the playing almost 10 yards off for everybody across the whole secondary, that one was what was getting frustrating. And then there were a couple of miscommunications and things too, like the one pass to Fournette in the flat.
It was just
a complete coverage bust. So that's a little disconcerting too. So I don't know. It was frustrating to see that. But to your point, I mean, yeah, you've kind of got to go to a little bit softer coverage. But it just felt like it was too soft.
Yeah. To my eyes. The tricky thing is, I think they played tight coverage like twice on that drive,
mm-hmm.
and both times they got pick plays from Tampa. And Tampa was like, yeah, we're just going to run pick plays every time you do this. Yeah. Okay, we're going to back off. They finally run a blitz, right? Even if it was by accident with the Quay Walker thing. Quay, that play was weird because Tampa, what was it? Tampa went hurry up, and then like just Quay had no idea what to do and was like, all right, if I don't know what to do, I'm just going to be fast. It's like not the worst idea if you have a big old question mark, but could have been, you know, a little bit more helpful there. The edge rotations were weird. I assume that's because of weather. They weren't asked about that.
Yeah.
You know,
it's gotta be,
it has to be, right? I mean, they're just playing in crazy heat. They're playing against this Tampa team that, you know, is going to be able to hold the ball. So they weren't necessarily getting Gary and Preston out there at the same time, other than like, I guess you would say like priority snaps, right? Like mm-hmm. third downs basically.
Yep.
And in the red zone, I mean, you would see them, you know, Tampa has the ball at the 30 yard line going into their end zone. Right. And it would be like Enagbare and Jonathan Garvin out there, cause they're trying to give, you know, their guys, their starters breathers before they have to play goal line defense. And it kind of worked out. I mean, they only scored 12 points at the end of the day. Right. So it's hard to blame. I mean, 12 points against Tom Brady, could be worse. I know they don't work. Have any of those receivers. They have a back third string left tackle, but still Tom Brady being the trigger man.
Yeah. Well, and again, on the pass rush front too, Kenny ate pretty well today. He had a, I thought Kenny had a good day. Gotike, I think the left guard had a real rough.
He's rough the worst go. One out of all of them, I think. And he's like a preferred starter for them, the rookie. So I think the Packers were in on Gotike.
I think I remember that. I think they brought him in for a visit.
They visited Michigan a couple of times, or Central Michigan a couple of times.
Because he was the other tackle with Ryman, right? Yeah.
Yeah, Ryman was the kind of overaged left tackle who got like Eric Fisher comps just because they went to Central Michigan. And then Gotike was like the other guy that people were actually like looking into. Special teams, Mari Rodgers still up and down. He got a good return. It ended up getting called back on a really soft penalty, if you even want to call it that. And then he fair caught a ball when no one was within like 20 yards of him.
Somebody said, I can't remember if it was Archon in the Slack, said that he's basically just a random number generator.
That was me.
That was you. Yeah.
I was like, dude, none of this makes sense. Like, it's just totally random. Because he'll fair catch that, but then he'll like take one on the chin for no gain. And it's like, what the heck is going on?
Like I alluded to before, like if you've seen Inside Out, the scene at the very end where the cat is, you know, they're zooming into the cat's brain and the cats are walking all over the keyboard and the cat freaks out. Like, I feel like that's what's going on with him when he's back there and the ball is in the air. Just has no idea what to do. And you never know what's going to happen.
If we get some of these receivers back, why isn't Dobbs playing that role?
Yes, thank you. I mean, they already like him, you know, in some of the screen game stuff that they've run in the first couple of weeks, just kind of navigating through traffic and stuff, getting the ball in space. So that's more or less, unless he just for some reason can't catch a punt, which doesn't seem to be the case. He's been returning punts since, you know, all throughout college and, you know, presumably back into high school and stuff too. So I don't think that's the issue. I completely agree at this point, you know, burn Amari's game day spot. I understand if you need to keep him on the 53 because of finances and whatever, but burn his spot on the game day roster for somebody that you might actually use in another role and let Dobbs return punts. And I don't know, put Toure out there as a gunner or something. I don't know, but yeah, he finally got his first snap or two on offense outside of kneel down situations. But I'll be curious to see Monday morning when, you know, how many snaps he actually got, because you certainly didn't notice him at all. And Winfrey got a handful of snaps and a handful of targets ahead of Rodgers again. So we just keep coming back to this. Well, what do you do here? Why are you here? Why are you active on game day?
And Winfrey only has one more call up. So you get three call-ups this year from the practice squad. He's been called up in week one and week three. Patrick Taylor was called up last week and then got promoted to the 53. So who knows, like, might be an injury away from the team being like, do we need to call up Winfrey and move away from one of these wide receivers? And then becomes a question of, like, do we want 2.5 years of Amari Rodgers moving forward, or do we want the entirety of Samori Toure's contract? And I don't know what the answer to that question is, but if you need to play Dobbs as a return man, I think he can do it, especially
absolutely.
When Kylan Hill comes back, he can play kick returner. So split the duties and move on from that point, I think. Yeah. Elsewhere in special teams, Pat O'Donnell had 7 punts, 5 inside the 20. Again, one got pinned down to the 1 yard line with the Keyshawn Nixon down.
That was really beautiful.
Good. Yeah. He's been doing really good. I know the fear is just like, it's going to get cold in the Midwest at some point, and that's when Packers kickers just like turn into stone, but he's doing pretty good and he has experience. Like, he kicked in Chicago.
Yeah. I'm excited. It was great. And not only, I mean, he also still had a really solid average too. I mean, he was over 48 yards, you know, on the day, long of 63. I mean, that's you can't ask for much more out of him than that. Because he was called on quite a bit today, punting 7 times.
Speaking of special teams penalties, I thought that was the worst. This was probably the worst called game, I think, of all of them. Just like weird special teams penalties. And then the Packers pass rushers were just getting mugged all day. Like, I know Tom Brady gets the ball out fast, but I mean, guys were getting held too. Guys are getting held.
I mean, the one holding call that I remember was the one where the left tackle had Rashawn Gary in a full-blown headlock.
Oh yeah, the chokehold.
Yeah, and there was at least a couple more, including I think it might have been the touchdown at the very end of the game, that it was basically the exact same thing, that he had his arm right around Gary's neck. They were given out arm bars to everybody on that offensive line.
I do remember that last drive, because I was thinking there was a holding call. I can't remember if it was that one, but I was like, I know that, because I think it was like a first and 10 or first and goal. I can't remember which one it was. And I'm like, I know throwing that penalty like really kills the drive at that point, and it like puts the play in the ref's hands, but like, he's holding.
Yeah.
Like that also puts the play in the ref's hands. Like, if it's like, hey, he can hold now because it's the end of the game. Like, that's a tough situation to be in.
Uh-huh. You know? Yeah.
There's the BS roughing in, or running into the kicker penalty on Tipa on when the Packers were on punt return. He basically got blocked into the punter. I mean, not basically. He got blocked into the punter. He did,
yeah.
Like, thrown into him, and that was a five-yard penalty. It's like,
well, and that ended up being like almost 40 yards of field position change.
It was
too,
33 yards of field position change is what it was, because yeah, that was the long Amari run.
Right, exactly. And so, yeah, you take that 5-yard penalty, and then, you know, on the ensuing punt, Rudy Ford gets called for a ticky-tack block in the back too, and pushes him back. So, yeah, that was a brutal little sequence.
This was as stinker of a game as you can get without probably major injuries. I'm knocking on wood.
Yeah.
Right now about Jaire Alexander, that the Packers could win. Not fun. We'll get into vibe checks after the break. And we're back. All right. Offensively, I don't like it.
No.
I don't like the pony stuff. I really don't. They don't do enough with them. Yeah. If they're going to do it, they need to start mixing in, like, Aaron Jones, you have to play wide receiver.
Mm-hmm.
That's the only way to make it work.
I mean, the whole operation after the fumble – again, it's like that San Francisco game. After the fumble, the Packers got three first downs the rest of the game. Two of them on the last drive before, basically the last drive of the game, the long Lazard play, and then there was one other first down in there. But yeah, they got three first downs after the fumble. That's completely unacceptable. We can't have that, man. That's not going to do it.
I think I might look into it this week and just like track what kind of pony that they're using. It's funny to say that, what kind of pony that they're using this year, because my guess is most of it is 20 personnel, which is two back, zero tight end.
Mm-hmm.
And they really need to be a 21 team. I mean, if they're going to do it, like, you can't come out and just be like, we're running split back gun and we're motioning a guy to run a bubble and we either throw it to him or we don't. And we have one play action shot out of, off of it. Like, there's not enough there to run that offense. You have to be able to do things like get into 21, have a tight end out there. It's AJ Dillon in the backfield and Aaron Jones is a wide receiver and you have to throw it to him. Right.
Yep.
Or Aaron Jones is in the backfield. There's a tight end out there. And now it's like, oh, AJ Dillon's playing the wing. And now we have to line up to this formation. And like, we're not ready for it because we're in nickel. And now you have two tight ends on the field. It has to be tricky dicky stuff like that. And the same way that they use like Lazard as like a borderline tight end sometimes, and that creates like personnel mismatches. They have to do that with these guys.
The team that I wonder about, that can you model it after a little bit, is Cleveland. Like with Chubb and Hunt, they do all sorts of crazy stuff with them. Hunt scored a touchdown from lined up at an offset fullback position the other day. Why are we doing
a Thursday night football. They ran like a triple reverse screen to Kareem as a wide receiver, and it's like, that's, again, I'm not against the pony stuff. It's just like, you gotta show more than just like the orbit motion stuff.
Yep,
you gotta
get creative with it. I'm with you 100%.
I don't think Elton's 100% right now. I don't think it's gonna hurt him anytime soon. New England doesn't have a pass rusher. The Giants really don't have a pass rusher as it stands right now. I know Thibodeau was just hurt recently. They're not clicking though. So I'm like leaning like a 6. I feel worse about the offense today than I did coming into the game, which is crazy because they just beat probably the best team in the NFC.
Yeah. It's the whole operation, 5 or 6 straight drives with like one first down combined. Yeah. One little bit of adversity and everything kind of falls apart. And I don't know. I mean, I'm sure some of that first drive success was scripted you know, scripted stuff. LaFleur does a good job there. And the second drive too, they were cooking. I don't know exactly what it is that changed, that if it's just a morale thing or what the hell it was, but it's really frustrating to see this unit kind of go into a shell after, you know, one mistake or one bad play.
Yeah. Defensively, feeling pretty good. I don't think their tackling was great today.
Right.
I don't think Agreed. It was on par with what they have done in the past, like even last year, but it was definitely better than the first two games of the season, which is nice to see. I don't think there's really any killers in terms of personnel, but the defensive linemen outside of Kenny Clark haven't really made a play. Like, the edges have made plays, but like the defensive ends, like Lowry, Wyatt, Slayton's out there a whole ton. Reed hopped on a fumble. I guess that counts as a play made, but I mean, there's not very many of them.
No. Yeah. I think Lowry maybe made like one tackle for no gain in the run game today, but that was the only time I remember hearing his name at all. Yeah. We thought that this was going to be the year where Kenny finally had some help and it wasn't just going to be a one man show up front. And so far we haven't gotten that at all.
I told you I worried that all camp because they didn't have all those bodies there on the offensive line. And they're like, Jaron Reed is doing great. And it's like, I don't know. Was he just going against Jake Hansen? Like, it could have just been he's going against Jake Hansen. And like,
yeah.
You have the two-way bad eval instead of like, oh yeah, we like both of them. So
mm-hmm.
I don't know what happens there. It's weird because the lack of plays by the defensive line outside of Kenny puts them in a situation where they actually have to play more defensive linemen. Because mm-hmm. that's where they go from. They're like, you know, the linemen are just going straight to the linebacker level. And they're like, oh crap, we have to hop in a penny and take Quay Walker off the field. And it's like,
yeah,
dang, that sucks. That sucks. Quay yeah. is a good player and the defensive ends aren't, but you have to like stuff the run in some sort of way. So they just jam up bodies in there. It's like, it sucks. This isn't fun.
Yeah.
I'm hoping they can add, I mean, they don't have a lot of money. They have concluded operation, cut everyone off of injury reserve with an injury settlement. They've succeeded in that. I think they've saved something around like $4 million doing that. So they should have like $10 million in cap space as of now. They probably want to roll some of that over into next year because next year is not necessarily going to be peachy either in terms of the cap space unless they completely rework Rodgers' deal or push Bakhtiari's deal forward or something like that. Right. Jones is going to be a question mark too, not to get too far ahead of ourselves, but they have a little bit of money to play around with. I'm hoping that, you know, if some of these guys who play for, you know, the Texans or something like that, that aren't very good and haven't won a game yet. Raiders, by the way, haven't won a game yet. That's another team. If some of these, you know, vets on those teams are like, hey, actually we want to release, we want to go chase the title ring. We'll take vet minimum, whatever, get the veteran exemption deal yep. or whatever that is.
The Whitney Merciless. Yeah. The Whitney Merciless approach from last year.
Yeah. I'm hoping that comes yep. on the D line this year. Cause
yeah,
I really do think that that's kind of where they need it. And they haven't promoted either of the guys who kind of were making plays on the preseason team. So they haven't promoted the other Slayton, Chris Slayton or Jack Heflin for games. So.
Yeah. We'll have to see. I mean, again, Kenny had a nice game, 2 sacks today. I think one of them was a little bit of a cleanup sack, but still he was regularly in the backfield. And the only reason he didn't have more was because Brady gets the ball out quick.
So quick. And it's so frustrating.
If not for that, I mean, Kenny might've had 4 and Gary might've had, you know, 2 or 3 as well.
And Brady was playing pretty good in this game. I know he didn't have receivers, but like,
I was just going to say, he just didn't have a whole lot to work with. I mean, Russell Gage got like 13 targets or something in this game.
Yeah. Crazy.
I was joking because
right?
he did. Yeah.
Herman? Yeah.
Yep. Yeah. Both of them. Yeah. I was joking about Gage and because this morning I was trying to decide between starting Lazard versus Gage in fantasy and it ended up working out. Okay. But
yeah. Defense. Thanks. I'm at a 7 out of 10.
Yep. 7.
I just like there's just little things that worry me.
Mm-hmm.
It hasn't all been put together yet. It hasn't all clicked so far.
Yep.
We haven't had one crazy game where you're like, this is what the defense is supposed to look like.
I will say, I think this was maybe the best, well, not maybe, I think it was definitely the best game from the safeties so far this season. Yeah,
for sure.
Amos was alive. Yeah. He had a couple of real nice plays, at least one tackle for loss, and you know, looked pretty solid in run support. Was getting into the sidelines a little bit, and then Savage had a couple of nice plays in coverage too. Even if Devondre's not there to tip the 2-point conversion, Savage is all over Gage in that back corner of the end zone. I don't think there's a real good chance that ball is getting completed anyway. No. So, yeah, good game, bounce back game from those two guys today.
Also, what a weird call. I know it's at the goal line, but Tom Brady on the run, cutting half the field. That's the play that you want with, you know, the decision to go to OT or not.
Yeah.
Kind of a weird call for me.
Yep. I'm fine with it.
Yeah. No, I'm happy with the result. 14-12. Yep. I'll take the win.
Exactly.
Special teams. I'm
at an 8, and the only reason I'm not at a 9 is because of Amari's brain cramps.
Yep. Yes, 100%. Like the Gunners, the Vices are playing crazy. We're seeing protection get picked up.
San Rudy Francisco Ford
trying to blitz the hell out of everyone, you know, on both sides. Like,
yeah, Rudy Ford showed up today and had a nice stick and a punt return too. Like, yeah, these guys on the outside are in punt coverage especially are looking good, and it's been a long time since we've been able to say that. Since,
we gotta figure
since
out
what?
A name for them, the Nixon and Ford combo.
We gotta come up with something involving pardons.
We're on to something.
Yeah,
we're on to something.
We were making a lot of Richard Nixon jokes on Twitter today. So, there's it's just too good to not have something with Ford and Nixon together. We'll workshop it. If anybody listening out there has any ideas for those two. Hit us up on Twitter.
Yeah. Bisaccia is good. I'm
kind of
worried he's going to be a head coach in a year.
Yeah, I could see it. For some reason, like, some of these special teams guys just never seem to get those gigs though, right? Like, how long was Dave Taub in like Chicago and Kansas City? And every year it was like, oh, Dave Taub is going to get a head coaching job. And it just never happened. Like, I'm trying to think of the last one that I remember who made that jump, and it was Harbaugh, right?
No,
that's right.
It's Judge.
That's right.
But he was only doing it for like a year. He was like a wide receivers coach, really. But yeah, it's so weird because special teams is really, I mean, think of like a head coach's job. I know it's really sexy to have a offensive play caller doing it from the sideline right now and all that stuff. But like, I don't know, like. Who knows more about the roster and the roster construction than a special teams coach? Who knows more about player development than a special teams coach? Like,
that was exactly what I was going to say. He's the only other coach outside of the head coach who has to deal with every player on the roster or at least every position group on the roster to some extent. So it would make sense. And I wouldn't be surprised, but like I said at the top, this game felt to me a lot like the playoff game against San Francisco last year in terms of the flow, with the exception being that the special teams didn't shoot themselves in the dick this time. So I'll take it.
Patriots week coming up. Yep. Patriots are 1-2. Mac Jones probably has a high ankle sprain and probably won't play based off of the reporting that's coming out right now. X-rays came back negative, but they're suspecting
Brian
high
Hoyer
ankle
game.
Play.
Yeah.
Brian Hoyer. The backup being Bailey Zapp.
It's the Kent State rookie, I think, right?
Like, no, Western Kentucky. He was the guy
who transferred
from Houston Baptist.
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
Which just changed their name to Houston Christian, I think. I don't know why they don't want to be called Baptist, but...
Nope.
I'm mentally at 4-1.
Yeah.
I don't want to count my chickens too fast, but like, Giants don't scare me, Patriots don't scare me. They could do something dumb. I assume they're going to mentally to like record projection at best 14-3, right? Or no, 13-4. Bills, we already have a loss. Two random dumb games. That's where I'm at. That's my expectation at this point.
Ideal scenario, I could see 14-3. But no, I agree. I think 13-4 is entirely likely plausible. This was one that we had circled as a loss this week. So 100%. you got one back, and and now let's get into this four game stretch of Pats, Giants, Jets, Commanders. Man, Commies look terrible.
So bad.
That
I saw Carson Wentz had like, it was something like 6 completions, 8 sacks in the first half.
Oh god.
Just like something that looks made up. Like you gave a kid a controller on Madden, he has no idea how to play it first time. Stats.
Oh my gosh.
Terrible. Terrible.
That's nuts. But yeah, no, this team could very easily be going into that Buffalo game 6-1. And again, this could be very much a rehash of 2021, the way that things are shaping up right now.
This is a nice little eval period for the Packers, where it's like, hey, the record doesn't really matter right now. There's 3 undefeated teams. It's Miami, Philadelphia, and then the Giants pending Monday Night Football. I don't think anyone thinks the Giants are actually a legitimate threat. I don't even think people think Miami's a legitimate threat.
Yeah.
Miami just upset the team that had Buffalo had the highest Super Bowl odds in week 3 of any team since the 2007 Patriots.
And they
So anyone can get touched right now. Man. Anyone can get touched by any of these teams. Now it's just like, all right, week 1 loss, get that thing out of the way. Eval period, do what you do, fix it against some of these bad teams. Mm-hmm. It's like go into the Buffalo game with no less than or no more than 2 losses and try to win that ball game. Cause I feel like we're learning more about this team. Like they weren't any of the stuff that they're doing in this Tampa game, like all these RPOs, all this like weird front stuff that they're doing on third downs for pressure against Tom Brady. They weren't doing any of this against Minnesota in the opener. They didn't do this against Chicago. Like we're learning who this team is when they get good matchups. So like, just do what you do, do your base stuff for the next month. I'll see you when we play Buffalo.
Yep. Yep. I'm here for it. Let's go. Let's get there. Let's get to 6-1 and then deal with it.
Excited. We'll have the snap counts notes on, you know, injury notes. Hopefully, you know, Jair and Josh Myers aren't too banged up. All that stuff. Up on Monday. Go Pack Go, guys.
Go Pack Go.